Welcome to Season 4 of The Farcast, bringing you experts and insiders every week to help you navigate the economic and investing landscape. Now, here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome to The Farcast. I am Michael Farr. Thanks so much for joining us again this week. September 25th, we're a little bit later this week. It's been an event-filled week. On Washington and in New York, on Wall Street, and from around the world. Lots of information to cover, so we're going to give you a week recap here and give you some thoughts to go into the weekend and what we should be thinking about in terms of our portfolios for next week. Joining us for our first segment where we discuss the markets is, of course, your Farcast fan favorite, Kenny Polcari. Kenny Polcari is just absolutely the voice of the New York Stock Exchange for many years. Kenny, welcome back to the Farcast.
Thank you, Michael. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
We are glad you're here. Hey, Kenny, stocks have been showing a little bit of weakness. It looks like they're going to trade down again here on Friday. We're down this week. Tech has been rolling over. Apple has had a full-on bear market. It was down 20%, high to low. Lots going on. We're not getting a stimulus bill. We're not getting a president who says he's going to actually commit to a peaceful transition of power. England might be shutting down. The UK may be shutting down from another wave of coronavirus. Tell us what we should be making of all of this.
Listen, you did a pretty good job because I highlighted all those points in my notes.
Hey,
about to go out. But one way or the other, I don't think anybody should be surprised. First of all, because as you and I have spoken about before, September, October tends to be a volatile month in general. Throw on this year, you know, you got the virus, you've got the vaccine, you've got the election, and now you got the potential, you got the death of Justice Greenberg, and now you've got the potential threat, although I don't think it's a threat at all, because the Republicans came out yesterday and said, look, if we lose, trust me, there'll be a peaceful transition. So I think all that stuff certainly is creating short-term noise in the market. But as you and I both know, that geopolitical stuff doesn't really price stocks in the long term. That being said, it does create angst and anxiety going forward. Volatility index futures suggest that we're going to have continued volatility into December, which might suggest a contested election or some back and forth between the two parties. And that will also continue to cause angst one way or the other. Angst, on the one hand, you know, creates nervousness, but it creates opportunity. And so you point out Apple's down 20%, so quote unquote, in a bear market. Would I be selling Apple right now? Absolutely not. I'd be back.
Absolutely not.
Where is Apple going? Is Apple really going anywhere, or is Apple going to continue to change the world? We're on the verge of a new 5G. Where's Apple going? So in my opinion, when you look at money coming out of Apple and you look at people raising money, either they're raising money, putting it on the side, or they're raising money and trying to put it into other investments that they think are going to benefit in the new world after the election. All they're doing is using a lot of these tech names, and Apple, one of them, as a source of cash. But that does not change the fundamental story of Apple. So if you're a long-term investor and you want to be in tech, I always believe, and I've said this before, Apple is a core holding. So on opportunities like this, when it's down 20%, I think it's a huge opportunity. Now, that being said, I continue to think that patience is a virtue at this time of year because of the continued volatility. Apple could go down another 5 or 8%. Don't be surprised if it does, if it gets really antsy. But that doesn't mean, in my opinion, I'm not selling my Apple if it goes down another 5 or 8%.
No, I'm
absolutely buying more.
Well, okay, so Kenny, you said a couple of things there I want to go back on because they're very important. One, I don't want to say that I'm ready to back up the truck on Apple, but look, if you don't own any Apple and you want to have some participation in tech, something goes down 20%, that's when you buy it. If you're sitting there thinking to yourself, gosh, you know, it's falling, maybe it's going to fall more, that's the trap. That's the way you talk yourself out of doing the right thing emotionally. So if it feels a little uncomfortable, it's probably the right thing to do. So at least take a position, right? If you don't own it, you got to take a position in it, maybe. I mean, that we don't make recommendations to buy or sell securities. We're just telling you what Kenny and I would do as professionals with more than 30 years of experience doing this.
Correct. And you have to start to feel, and I think what people have to understand is you have to get used to feeling a little bit uncomfortable. Because like you said, it paralyzes you if you become uncomfortable and then you do nothing, right? It's about being uncomfortable, but recognizing that in a stock like Apple, that's broken down is really being used at this moment as a source of cash, in my opinion, because of the angst, not because the fundamental story has changed. In fact, I think the fundamental story only gets stronger as we go into this new 5G world.
Well, as you mentioned, the new 5G, and they've got new products, a new watch. I've never had an Apple Watch before, Kenny. I've never had one. I just ordered one of the new ones. It's going to come on like October 10th. Yep. I'm wondering if I'm going to like the thing or not. My kids are teasing me because there's a new feature in it that if you fall, it will dial 911.
It's unbelievable, right?
Now, yeah, but, you know, I got these kids of mine are like, so, Dad, if I fall, kiss my... Really? I mean, I'm 59 years old. I run 5 miles a day. Jesus Christ, I'm not going to fall. I mean, my father's going to be 95 in October. We might get him one, and we might worry about his falling. I got a few years on. The other thing you said that was that geopolitical doesn't sort of adds to the volatility, but it doesn't do much for the long term typically in pricing stocks. Is that what you said?
That's exactly what I said. Correct. Because in the end, what's really pricing stocks is the economy, profits, profit margins, all that stuff is really what's pricing stocks. The geopolitical stuff, it's all very interesting, and it creates a lot of short term noise, which in the interim creates short-term swings and fluctuations in the market. So, you know, in my mind, as long as the story doesn't fundamentally change either the investing environment or the individual stock, then I think opportunities like this do just that, create opportunities in names that you may want to either initiate a position, add to a position, talk about, at least put it on your radar.
Right. So we've got that tech sector that's having this sort of rollover correction. Tech sector's down 14%. You got to start looking at tech. I think you still also have to look at some of those names that have been beaten up, that haven't recovered, that will recover more, not only in a 5G environment, but in a post-COVID environment.
100%. Stocks,
I mean, I'm not going out and buying cruise lines yet,
correct,
and I'm not buying hotel stocks.
Right.
But if you take a look at a Disney that's still down or other stocks that might be down 20% from their highs, there are places you can add here.
That's right, because Disney is not just about, you know, Disney Cruise or Disney Parks. There's a whole lot. Disney's a much bigger story, so I would agree.
You got ESPN, and you've got Disney Plus, and you mean, what do they have, 50 million people now signed up for Disney Plus?
Yeah, I think that's the latest number.
It's amazing,
and I think, you know, there are other parts of the tech industry that deserve some attention, whether it's cybersecurity, right? Whether it's the Internet of Things, the way the world is so interconnected. Like you just said, I just saw an ad on CNBC about Amazon getting ready to launch. Did you see it? They're getting ready to launch it's like the Nest thing that you now put in your house, but it's a drone that sits in a holder, and you can be at your house in Washington, D.C. and activate the drone at your house in Naples, Florida. The thing will fly around your house into every room so that you can see what's going on in every room when you're not there. Listen, whether you like that idea or you don't like the idea, I get freaked out by that stuff, so I'm not necessarily a buyer of it, but the fact is, it is where technology is going. So all the other support systems within the technology space are areas that people can absolutely...
I thought that's why we had mothers-in-law, so that you would call them and they would fly around in every room when you're not there and tell you
And when you're there, they fly around in every room.
You know, I don't know. I made that mistake. I got to my mother-in-law's house. She met me on the front porch with a broom in her hand, and I said, going somewhere? You know, I mean... That didn't go well, by the way. That was not the right thing to say. But it just kind of came out all of a sudden.
It's a guy thing, right? You know, we understand it. It's a guy humor.
And let me stop before I get phone calls. I adore my mother-in-law. She is the most fabulous woman on earth. I just can't, I can't give up on all the mother-in-law jokes in the world here. Kenny, stocks are not cheap. I was looking at P.E. ratios. I gave a speech last night. This was weird, Kenny. I gave a speech to a group in South Carolina. And there were 100 people on a Zoom call, and I have my presentation materials on the shared deal, and it was a little weird. I think it went well, but we were talking about stocks, and we were looking at PE ratios now and forward PE ratios for growth. Stocks are two standard deviations, or PE ratios are two standard deviations above the normal, above the average. You know, when you and I think, ask, okay, so Kenny, what's a normal long-term P.E. ratio for you? What is it in your head?
Well, you know, when rates are normal, when rates are zero, because that's a problem, right? When we have normalized rates, 3% and 4%, then the PE goes down to 16 or 17 is more normal. But when rates are zero, what's the normal rate? Well, clearly today it's, what is it, 26%? 26 times, you said?
Right? I didn't say, but that's where it is. We're 26 and maybe 20 in the low 20s on forward earnings. But you know, you talk to guys of our vintage, and we're going to say 16 times is a normal PE ratio. 16
Correct.
Times is kind of the number. Maybe even 15 times. And if you show me anything below 14 times, I want to buy it.
That's buy.
It's in my head, right? So you've got earnings growth there. So this market, Kenny, isn't cheap. We do have this rotation in tech. What should Fred and Ethel be thinking? Because, of course, we're out of time already.
Well, so I think, again, Fred and Ethel should not be making an emotional decision. They should be, as long as they've got a broadly diversified portfolio, they should just be comfortable in that, because the fact is Fred and Ethel should not be overweighted in any one sector. They certainly should not be overweighted in growth stocks. But they should look, it's going to be volatile in the months ahead. We know that. Take advantage of the plan. Stick to the plan. Talk to your advisor. You know, get some extra encouragement if you need it. But the last thing Fred Nettle should be doing right now is bailing out of a market that, at the moment, in my opinion, is setting itself up to advance into the new year.
We're going to see what Jack Barugian has to say about that, too. Jack's been very good. He's coming up in segment three. Isn't he the best?
I love
you. Kenny, when you were last on and I asked you that question, you said, listen, stocks have had a pretty good run. Fred and Ethel should take a look at their portfolio and make sure that they haven't taken on too much risk, that maybe there was a time to rebalance if things had built up. Well, ladies and gentlemen, just think about that. Tech had run up enormously. You might have been overweight in tech at that point had you looked at your portfolio. Most portfolios were. If you'd listened to Kenny, you probably would have trimmed a little bit. He's saying not do that now, but that's what you do. You kind of trim when things get very expensive. You rebalance a little bit, but you follow your discipline, right, Kenny?
But I'm not saying don't. I'm saying rebalance is always the right thing, right? If you are out of balance, then you should. But if you're not, because I'm assuming now that the market's backed up, that your manager, your asset, your financial planner, your money manager has kind of walked you through that process. So in my opinion, now's the time probably that I would be more, you know, I'd be patient as a virtue, but I would be ready to jump because I think there are some opportunities coming up.
Don't make emotional decisions. Make decisions based on your discipline and your very long-term goals, because the short-term is always noisy and emotional. This, Kenny, feels like it's going to get a lot more emotional before it calms down. It feels like the noise is just starting to increase in volume with the election and with everything else that's going on and the Supreme Court nomination. We're going to hear from the president tomorrow. Time to keep your powder dry and look for some opportunities is what I'm hearing from Kenny Polcari.
That is right.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kenny Polcari is a Farcast fan favorite, the voice of the New York Stock Exchange. Kenny, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Mike. Talk to you next time.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Kenny. Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, we come back. We're going to talk to Dan Mahaffey from the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress. We're going to hear what he has to say about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the upcoming election. Will President Trump accept this decision? And what all of that noise will mean for markets when we come back on the Farcast. Please stay with us.
Thank you for joining us on this week's Farcast. We'd like to invite you to follow Michael on Twitter and LinkedIn. On his social media feed, you'll find links to all of Michael's media appearances, articles he's been quoted in such newspapers as the Wall Street Journal and Washington Post, and of course, the Farcast. Additionally, Michael shares some of the articles we are reading at Farmiller in Washington every morning that we feel have bearing on the investing landscape. That's Michael_K_Farr on Twitter and Michael Farr on LinkedIn. And now, back to Michael and the Farcast. Welcome back to the Farcast. And now here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back. We do have Dan Mahaffey with us from the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress, where he is the in charge of policy for the center, the nonpartisan think tank in Washington. He's also the senior political analyst on the Farcast as we are here in season four. Dan has been the voice of Washington for us and provided wonderful insights and education each and every week. Welcome back, Dan.
Thanks, Michael. Good to be back with you.
You know, Dan, Harry and I, when we started the Farcast 4 years ago, God help us, 4 years ago, we thinking about having three different segments and one of them being political every week, Harry and I said, are we going to really have something new in politics to talk about each and every week? What will we do to fill that time? Believe it.
Yeah, you know that curse of may you live in interesting times? Whatever monkey's paw you were holding while you were asking about that political segment, I'd ask if you just burn it now, please.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. Dan, here's what I want to talk about this week, and we've got to try and stay on course because there's just so much to talk about. The president is going to come out with a new nominee for the Supreme Court tomorrow. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to lie in state in the Capitol as the first woman ever to lie in state in the U.S. Capitol. Speaker Pelosi is putting forth a $2.4 trillion stimulus plan. The president is also questioning already whether there's going to be some sort of voting fraud and whether he is willing to accept the election results, bringing into question a peaceful transition of power, that he just won't leave the White House. And also, finally, Dan, the president has been talking about how he is going to move forward on his health care, his version of Obamacare, which he's trying to repeal in the courts, but at the same time, it sounds like he's trying to rebrand as Trump Care and protect pre-existing conditions, which I think are already in there. But Dan, let's start with late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, please.
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to fill this segment at all, but
right.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, look, the passing of a champion on the court, a hero to many Americans, and truly here also, though, a chance for conservatives to reshape the court. And look, as much as we think about the, you know, claim that there could be hypocrisy for Merrick Garland, the matter is that the votes are there. It's aligned there. They're going to move to replace her. And it's as much a realization that for so many Republicans on Capitol Hill and establishment Republicans and conservatives throughout the country, holding their nose and dealing with so many of the scandals of Donald Trump is made up for by this. So this is going to go ahead. And I think it's going to be an interesting thing for the dynamics of 2020. And I think Republicans should be cautious about the blowback they're going to face from this.
Okay, so hang on, Dan. Let's start for 1 second. You're saying that one of the reasons that a lot of the Republicans and conservatives have put up with Donald Trump for so long was because he would be able to have this appointment and be able to skew the court in such a conservative way. That's been the highest priority for many. Is that what you're saying there?
That is, and it's long been the goal of the conservative movement and a entire, I don't want to say industrial complex, but let's frankly call it an industrial complex on the right that has been there to shape and reshape the courts, and not just the Supreme Court, but you'll have Donald Trump with three Supreme Court picks and all the changes they've made, appointments to the lower levels of the judiciary. And it's something that Mitch McConnell and other conservatives have had a goal of for decades.
Well, haven't Democrats had the same goal? I mean, to be fair, if the Democrats were able to put forth a liberal court, they would have done it if the options came up during the proper administrations.
Well, there would have. And look, you can go back in the time machine and say, should have Ruth Bader Ginsburg and others resigned when Obama was there and they had 60 votes. But the politicization of the court has gone full tilt, and it's going to be a much longer conversation than this segment if we think about how we come back from the brink on the politicization of the court. But that's just the reality we live with now.
How much does a 6-3 court change the future and face of America?
It can change a lot of things, but we also just don't quite know the nature of the court yet. It depends on is it Amy Comey Barrett, as we say? That would be a pretty significant conservative shift. But then the justices themselves change over time. Gorsuch who just said that, less than 3 years after being appointed, just 3 years, Gorsuch supported trans and LGBT rights. So, you know, you could have a 6-3 court, but what if you had a 6-3 court with Gorsuch and Roberts, perhaps as swing votes? These are all sorts of court criminology you don't know until you start to see them in action.
What is the political fallout now? So the president tomorrow, before Justice Ginsburg's funeral, is going to come up with a new nominee for the court tomorrow afternoon. What's the political fallout, and will that will those hearings occur before the election? Will that seat be filled before the election or after? And what's the fallout?
Hearings will be held before the election. I do look at Mitch McConnell's statements that have said, you know, the vote could come after the election. He's given himself wiggle room on that. The politics of this are going to be interesting, though. They say, and there's two competing narratives within Trump world right now. And the question is, do you shore up the evangelical and Catholic vote with a more conservative pick, one that is more established on a pro-life record, conservative jurisprudence, or does that risk blowback? Look, 20% of Trump's voters in Iowa were pro-choice, for example. A lot of the religious right, their kind of guy would have been Ted Cruz. And
right.
And the people Trump needs to come out are sort of the college, non-college educated whites in rural America, and they're not a necessarily religious bloc. And if Democrats' message on Trump's court pick is being someone who threatens your health care and threatens your personal liberties, this could really change some of the dynamics. It's not the clear lock I think they think it is.
Okay. We will watch that and listen for that nominee tomorrow. Next week, we have the presidential debate on the 29th. Vice President Biden and President Trump will have their first face-off. What do you expect from that?
I'm expecting, I'm expecting to see two 70-year-olds debate. And we're going to then have, I think, though, not a lot of shift from it unless there's some kind of seismic gaffe by either candidate. You know, funny enough, Michael, I looked back at the Real Clear polls average. This race really hasn't changed since November of 2019.
Is that right? What do you mean there? Why? How has it not changed? Biden's been ahead and he's just stayed ahead?
Yeah, Biden keeps running in this 48 to 52% range, and Trump is kind of in this 42 to 46% range. And the mindsets of people have really settled in hard, and I think a lot of them are now looking at this is being a turnout race, so that's why Republicans are wringing their hands about how they approach this court pick, and Democrats are so worried about balloting access, absentee voting. Now they're realizing this is all about turnout, not changing minds. And I think you finally see, too, that the Trump world, as we've discussed on this show, is now scrambling this week to rejigger expectations that Trump is going to have a poor performance during the first debate, and that Biden will look sharp.
Speaking of getting out the vote, a friend who is a Fox News anchor sent me a video yesterday that Atlanta strippers now have done a video called Get Ya Booty to the Polls. And I think there is a grassroots movement here that's going to continue. But Get Ya Booty to the Polls, that's actually on YouTube if anybody wants to look. And Atlanta strippers care about the election, Dan. This is good, right?
Yeah, and of course I watched that video entirely for political science research purposes. But these young women spoke more eloquently about local issues than a lot of elected politicians.
Eloquently about local issues, probably they understand them a lot better. Let's take a look. The president's been talking about not necessarily accepting the result from this election and perhaps not agreeing to leave the office of the presidency. What do you make of that?
Well, I make of it is, look, I think there's a lot of smart people looking at our election infrastructure. It's charitable to say that it's held together by bits of twine, duct tape, and a spare tack you found in the junk drawer. There's a lot of trouble there. But what these people are looking at are the various scenarios. And I think it's a good example to compare it to something like Y2K, where it's good to know the worst case scenario, because then a lot of smart people in a lot of places are going to work quietly to solve the problem. Or in the case of the Atlanta strippers, not so quietly, but get the vote out, get start to think through these scenarios. And look, there's a lot of ways that President Trump could gum up the works, complicate this process. But let's think of it, too, as the way that it's sort of something that all kind of grasping strongmen do, be it the claiming they can do these things or trying to make their power seem more immense in a way to kind of cow the opposition or make it seem like, you know, their reelection is inevitable, when that's just not the American system. And I think it was helpful, too, to see many of the Republican senators say, look, that's just not how we work. Although they just couldn't find enough backbone to say that directly to the president.
Nancy Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi, yesterday basically started pushing a new stimulus bill around $2.4 trillion. A lot of Republicans are at $1 trillion. The president's at $1.5 trillion. Anything going to happen here? They don't seem to be getting any closer. What happens to this stimulus bill that Jay Powell is begging for from the Federal Reserve, saying we have to have fiscal stimulus? Will it get done, and why are they so tone deaf?
The stimulus isn't happening because they're focused on the political calendar. A certain percentage of the Republican Senate still believes that this is not even worth going ahead with further stimulus at this point. They don't even think it's necessary, despite what Chairman Powell said. Argue that we've spent enough already, and that the economy, they'd say the economy is recovering and doing fine. Look, these are all, I think part of it was that the you never had that massive market panic like you did in the financial crisis about a lack of congressional action. There's been no clear pressure given the range of other things on their agenda, be it the election, race. Politics are prevailing over the health of the economy, even though one would think that the clearly and painfully political thing to do would just be getting money out to people.
But these are going to have long-term economic effects, and the economic data are softening. Ladies and gentlemen, as we think about the stock market and we think about the economy, and they are tied over the long period, over the long term, they really are closely tied. During periods of economic expansion, stock prices do very well. Certainly during periods of monetary and fiscal stimulus, stock prices do well too, but for different reasons, not because the economy is doing all that well, but certainly because they're just shoving that much cash into this balloon, and it will inflate as it has been. But the economic data are softening. And when we saw at the end of July the benefits, the added unemployment benefits expire of $600 a week, those stopped at the end of July. Consumer spending in August was down. Consumer spending in September is down. We have an economy that's driven 70% by the consumer. It matters here, folks, and things are slowing down a little bit. So when the Federal Reserve sort of rings that alarm bell and says, Congress, come on, Congress really ought to listen. They don't have a political agenda. Their only agenda is economic.
In 90 seconds there, if a lot of them listen to that, you just trebled the economic knowledge of a lot of elected representatives.
Well, that's a shame. You know, during 08 and 09, Dan, I was on Capitol Hill a whole bunch for CNBC. I was down there regularly. I'm the only practicing money manager still in the city of Washington who's a CNBC contributor. There are a lot of politicos and others and consultants, but I'm the only practicing money manager in Washington. And so I was on Capitol Hill trying to interpret all of this stuff through the great financial crisis. Members of Congress were grabbing me by the elbow, saying, can you explain this to me, please? What in the hell is going on, Farr? Look, these folks, you know, were very successful car dealers in places in the Midwest who have gotten and care about their country and are very bright and they're wonderful patriots, but they don't have a background in this stuff. And they need some help, you know?
That, and, you know, let's think, you know, and I think one day when we're writing the history of the book of this will be, because of the pandemic, what was lost in the inability to lobby, the inability to meet face-to-face, those informal discussions that you just described, be it between lawmakers or lawmakers and private sector leaders that were all lost in this crisis because we were distancing.
Well, distancing, and because we still haven't, other than lobbyists, put together really a good place or way to educate members of Congress during critical moments about background information that they need. They're waiting for the lobbyists to fill in the blanks for them. There really ought to be a better way, in my opinion. One of the most chilling moments, and I know we're going over time, I'm sorry, Harry, chilling moments during the great financial crisis, I've gotten to be friends with a couple of the folks in Washington, and one fellow was a former Secretary of the Treasury, and I saw him during the great financial crisis. He's a former Secretary of the Treasury, not recent Secretary during the financial crisis. And we were walking through a locker room, and he grabbed me by the elbow. He said, "Can you come over here for a minute and talk to me?" And I've known him pretty well. And I said, "Certainly, Mr. Secretary." And we stood aside, and he said, "Michael, what do you think's going on?" And that scared the hell out of me. I thought, wait a minute. Treasury Secretary is asking Michael what he thinks going on. This can't be good. This can't be good at all. Well, I promise that the current Treasury Secretary does know what's going on, and he is very engaged in those discussions. The chairman of the Federal Reserve does know what's going on. We hope that Congress will listen, because we're at a very tender place economically, and we should not ignore it, and we should not be complacent about it. Dan, what do you expect finally from the debates? And we got to go.
I think the debates, like I said, let's see how they manage expectations going into them, and if it's going to take something pretty seismic to shake them up. And then we'll track, I think, next week. Let's talk about sort of these various proposals and stuff we're going to see finally on perhaps drug prices, other economic policy trickling out.
Give me a quick prediction. Is Vice President Biden going to fare well, or is this a fall on the face moment? What do you think?
I think he gets through, but starts to, you tend to see him like fade a little bit as the night goes on. So it'll be, I think, interesting to see how he marshals his energy.
Sleepy Joe should really not look sleepy during this debate. If he can pull off one thing, that's going to be the key.
Yeah.
What'd you say, Dan? Be a challenge?
Exactly. That's the challenge they need to overcome.
Dan Mahaffey from the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress, and the senior political analyst on the Farcast. We'll be right back with Jack Barugian. Jack's calls on the market and what's going on in the economy have been eerily accurate for the past couple of years. Listening to Jack would have made me a lot of money, really would have. We'll be right back. Please stay with us.
Thank you for joining us on this week's Farcast. Every week, we bring you experts and insiders to give a deeper understanding of our changing world. If you would be interested in Michael Farr delivering a presentation on the economic forecast for 2021 and beyond, please contact me, Harry Jennings, at 202-530-5608 or email me at hjennings@farrmiller.com. In the past, Michael has delivered presentations at such venues as the Palm Beach Chamber of Commerce, the YPO Economic Summit, and the University of Delaware Economic Forecast. We are booking now for late 2020 and early 2021 for events where Michael will share his views into the recovery from the pandemic, including the consequences of the stimulus and the opportunities for investors. Reserve your date now on Michael Farr's speaking schedule. And now, back to Michael and the Farcast. Thank you for joining us on the Farcast. And now, back to your host, Michael Farr.
We are back. Thanks so much for joining us again this week. Season 4 of the Farcast, September the 25th, coming at the end of a very interesting week. It's been a tough week for markets, been a tough week for Washington. And actually, as we're looking at the coronavirus around the world, we're a little concerned with what's going on in the UK. They may be facing another shutdown. In the US, as particularly as we look at markets, we have seen this correction in tech, actually a bear market in Apple, down a full 20%. What does all this mean coming into the elections? We go to a Farcast fan favorite, one of your favorites, and actually one of the most insightful and accurate guests we've had on the Farcast, our friend Jack Barugian, chief economist, co-founder of the Universal Compute Exchange. the India Compute Exchange. He was CEO of the Index Futures Group and for Nikko Securities, Japan's second largest brokerage house. He was a senior exec at Credit Agricole. This guy is the guy, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, Jack.
Thank you, Michael. It's always nice when you introduce me that way. It makes me feel a lot bigger than I am, but it's great.
I did not even have to do you justice, Jack, but you're very modest. Jack, should we be concerned about the stock market getting long in the tooth? Is this a sector rotation or is a bear market coming or should we just be buying with both hands?
That's a loaded question, isn't it?
I hope so. I really do hope so. I get paid to ask those.
As bullish as I have been, Michael, and you know how bullish I am. And you know, I watched the Fed just flood the system with capital. It's getting to the point right now where I'm starting to get that trader gut feeling coming in that I've gotten a few times in the past. Now, you and I, fortunately, have been around long enough to have seen certain excesses that build up in the market. We saw it happen in 87. We saw it happen in 2000. We saw it happen in 08 and 09. And it's always for a different reason. And if you think about it, it's always something that comes out of left field that nobody is expecting. I'm starting to be concerned about that. I used to have a saying when my late father with his thick Armenian accent would ask me about the market, it was time for me to start getting defensive. And he was very consistent. He asked me about it in 87. He asked me about it in 99. He asked me about it in 08. Very consistent, all right? And he's not around today because if he were, I bet you he would be asking me about this market.
Well, it's time for the crystal ball and perhaps a seance, Jack, to see what Dad might be thinking these days. My dad will be 95 next month, and he has been asking me about it, and he says, Michael, this doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense if you think about it. Let's go through what's been happening. You know, you and I can see this. We're looking at unemployment at ridiculous levels that we have never experienced before. We're looking at GDP forecasts that have been cut and continue to get cut. A pandemic that is still out of control for all intents and purposes. To me, we have got a lot of bad. On top of all of this, we have got a lot of political insecurity ahead of us within another 40 days. So, you know, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? If there's ever a time to be defensive, this is probably it. These next couple of months, I'll rephrase that. If there's ever a time I don't mind losing money on a hedge, I guess it would be over the course of these next couple of months.
You know, one of my friends down in Florida told me that his broker called him in April and said, I want you to still stay largely in cash. And the guy said, why? And he said, because I know your personality. You can live with maybe not making money on the way up, but you're going to lose your mind if you're fully invested on the way down. So a lot of this trick to investing is really knowing yourself and what you can tolerate. Typically, if you own stuff for a really long time, you'll do just fine. But a lot of people just can't do that, can they?
No. And you know what's going to happen? Unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of these novice traders coming in. They're buying these triple leveraged ETFs, because they see fast money. And these are the people that are going to get burned. And that's what I worry about, that you're getting people that are getting into the market and that are starting to trade because they've got nothing else to do from home, essentially. And they're doing things and they are now in a professional's world. They are dealing with people like the Michael Farrs of the world, all right, like the Urios of the world, people that know these markets. And you know, I used to say this to people. I used to say, you know, there are no minor leagues when you get into these markets. When you start trading, you know, it is the major leagues. You are trading with first class real traders that are taking the other side of those trades. And why are they doing that? Because they make money off of the other side of your trades. So you've got to understand that this is getting to the point where it's getting a little frothy. Well, it's getting a lot frothy, let's be honest. But more importantly, it's getting to that point where you're getting all the ingredients, all right, for that recipe that ends up with a nice, hard correction.
You know, most people, Jack, most reasonable people in a serious court case would not choose to represent themselves. And though it's legal in this country, actually, it's legal. If you want to perform surgery on yourself, it's legal as long as you don't kill yourself, because it is illegal still to kill yourself. But you could remove your own appendix if you chose to. I would go to a physician. I listened to one other friend who said, I like to have the captain with 30 years of experience make the decisions on how to land the jumbo jet rather than a consensus of the passengers in the back on how it ought to be done. You do need a certain level of expertise. And yet, you know, here often we have the amateurs who come in and say, I think I understand this stuff. Here's my money. It's a bit weird.
Well, here's a perfect example. I talked to a new trader who turned to me and he said, well, it's okay because I'm playing with the house's money. And I said, wait a second. There is no such thing as house's money. Once you make that money, it is in your account. It is your money. It is no longer the house's money. See, and that mentality has to be eliminated. This is investing for the long term. People have to understand that. This is not a get-rich-quick scheme. And I think, unfortunately, when we start to see that creep into the marketplace, which is what's been happening as of late, it makes me, as a long-term player in these markets, a little concerned. It's one of those red flags that comes out every decade or so that says, you know, and it's the back of my head saying, Jack, be careful, watch out.
You know, when you've made money in the casino, Jack, you know, when how to tell if you've made money, if there's money in your pocket when you're out on the sidewalk.
That's right. When you walk away from the table and you know, that's exactly right.
Yes. Okay. But Jack, I'm going to take the other side and push back a little bit here, because if we're going to take a look at those items that you enumerated, ridiculous unemployment, GDP growth that's slowing, a pandemic, problems with Congress, too much debt coming up, we would have said all of those things back in April. Things got even weaker economically. It looks like we're hitting another soft patch here in the economy. We're certainly at least a month or more away from another stimulus package from the government, which is also going to mean more debt. And stocks have basically gone straight up because I think consensus is that it's all of this stimulus coming from the government. If they indeed continue to produce stimulus, why won't stocks go up and why should you be nervous?
Well, here, two things. Number one, I guess fiscal stimulus is not a given. You know, if there's ever anything that you can be sure of in Washington, it's that they'll screw it up. All right. And that's exactly how I feel this time, especially as we get closer to the election, because if this were not an election year, I would say you're absolutely right. Being an election year creates an entire new dynamic to all of this. And that's really what I worry about. So if we don't have that, now, remember, you've got other things, you know, for example, the foreclosures that haven't really taken place yet. No, there are a lot of people that are not paying rent. There are a lot of people that are not paying their mortgage. And all of this is still going to come to a head. We have been pumping the economy with steroids, all right? Yes. And these steroid injections have been bigger and bigger and bigger. And eventually, you've got to take the patient off of the medicine, all right? And guess what? You know, if you don't, that patient gets sicker and sicker and sicker. And that's really what I worry about with all of this liquidity, with everything that's been happening.
But Jack, there's no discussion of that. In fact, you've got Jay Powell saying we have more dry powder. There is more that we can do and are prepared to do. And folks on Capitol Hill are saying that after the election, they will get this stimulus bill passed as soon as they get it into a more politically convenient time.
Michael, let's take another way to approach this. All right, what if it doesn't work? What if? And this is
oh,
not.
I got
see,
it.
See, the consensus is that the Fed is bailing out the markets, is bailing out the economy. They're going to flood the markets, and they're going to, you know, and all the rest of this. Well, I lived during the Japan bubble. All right. Yes. I was an officer at NICO. I saw exactly what they did in Japan, where they took rates down to zero. All right. They did as much fiscal stimulus as they could, and they watched that Nikkei go down from 39,000 to under 10,000.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that we are Japan, but what if we end up in a deflationary environment where all of this isn't really helping, and the force feeding of inflation doesn't work? Now, and I guess this is only because I'm putting this more out as an academic question, because, you know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. All right. I don't know if that were to happen. All right, then we'd all be in trouble. We would watch a market that would probably break anywhere from 50 to 70% from where it's at right now. But that's my concern. That is where we could end up, and something that nobody seems to be talking about. And when nobody talks about something like that in an environment like this, I start to think about it.
You know, folks, Jack Barugian has been absolutely prescient on the markets and his insights. Ignore him at your own peril, I promise. I listen to Jack every time that Jack offers his insights to me. Jack, you were also fairly prescient some 6 months ago when you said, I think it's time to move a little money to gold, and I think you moved some to Bitcoin. Those have worked out pretty well for you, haven't they? Those little hedge investments?
Absolutely. I think that only because I saw what was the beginning of the debasing of the currency. The real question is there traction to that, or are we going to see that flip?
That was going to be my next question.
Yep, that initial reaction is exactly what we saw. But remember what we're looking at right now. This whole stay-at-home environment that's changing the world is in itself disinflationary. All right. All of the technology that we're talking about is disinflationary.
Yes,
everything
it is
that we've been dealing. And that is one of those pressures from the outside that people don't really pay attention to. So, you know, I guess the real question is, and this is really what it comes down to, can the Fed force feed inflation into the economy? Because if they cannot, then we are in a bit of a bind over the course of the next.
Well, they've been trying for 10 years and they have not. So one would presume that if they could, they would have by now.
You would think so. But then again, we've never had rates as low as they are. I mean, they're talking about taking rates down to, you know, zero, maybe even negative rates if necessary. You know, nothing's off the table, as our good Fed chairman has told us. And if that's the case, then, you know, it's something that you've got to be concerned with. Now, you couple all of that with the fact that you might have a new administration coming in that's going to jack up corporate tax rates, that's going to take out profitability, that's going to have to make you cut your earnings estimates down on everyone across the board. And now, again, it's a recipe.
Now you've got a market problem.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a recipe for a problem. And that's really why, if there's ever, as I've said, as I started off this whole dialogue, I said, you know, if there's ever a time to play defense, this is probably it.
So that's where I want to finish with here, because I always learn so much from you, and God bless you for coming on and helping all of our listeners, you know, the weeks that we get to hear from you. It's fabulous. Jack, talk to Fred and Ethel for a few minutes, as you have in the past, and give them some thoughts about how they should be thinking about their 401ks and their retirements and their individual investment accounts as they're getting fairly emotional coming into this investment, into this election. I'm getting calls saying, oh my God, Michael, should we just sell everything before Trump gets reelected or before Biden gets elected, depending on their political agenda? Now, shouldn't we just sell? Shouldn't we just get out? Isn't this just awful? I'm getting emotional responses.
First of all, I'm not a big fan of selling out and getting into cash. And the reason is because, and I was told this by a gentleman who's worth over $1 billion. And he said to me, and I won't use his name, but he said to me, you know, I gave him a list of reasons. I'll never forget this, back in 87, to get out of stocks. And he turned to me and he said, great, put on a hedge. And I said, well, you're not going to get out of anything? He said, no, because if I get out of something, I might not be able to ever get back in.
It was a very
thoughtful comment. And I remember it's something that I remember, you know, to this day. So what I would say is, first of all, don't do it yourself. Find somebody that knows how to manage, you know, capital, because what you were talking about is a very delicate type of strategy. You're putting on a hedge. You're trying to hedge out your exposure. So either, you know, you're a futures broker or you're an options broker or you're a trader. You might know how to be able to do this in a way that it might be a little nuanced. What I would say is find somebody that can explain how to put on a proper hedge and learn how to hedge out your environment or have somebody do it for you. Now, a lot of that also depends on how old you are, Michael. You and I know that. You know, I mean, look, I've got friends that are in their 60s that are still sitting on a lot of stock. And I'm saying, guys, you know, we are now getting closer and closer to retirement. You can't be sitting on a portfolio of 70 or 80% stocks. I don't care how well you've been doing, start to trim that back. All right. And, you know, they turn to me like I'm speaking Greek to them. All right. Yeah. Because, you know, quite frankly, they think, remember, these are all people that are doctors, they're lawyers, they're professionals. So they think that they are the best at everything. And God bless them, they're my best friends. But what I say to them is, do me a favor and find somebody that can teach you to balance out that portfolio. But more importantly, to be able to hedge out whenever you have that agita that builds up, all right, that you want to make sure. So if you got angst over the election, hedge out the exposure. Learn how to do it right or have somebody do it for you.
Jack Barugian is chief economist and co-founder at Universal Compute Exchange and the India Compute Exchange. He has run all sorts of firms and divisions around the world. He's one of the wisest voices, most knowledgeable voices we can hear on the Farcast. Jack Barugian, thank you so much for being with us.
Anytime, Michael. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for another Farcast. We'll be back next week. We're going to talk about what happened in the presidential debates. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court nominee with Dan Mahaffey. We have a full Farcast for you next week. Thanks so much. Please share us on social media. I'll be back next week. I'm Michael Farr.
Thanks for being with us on this Friday edition of the Farcast. A special thanks to Michael's guests, Kenny Polcari, Dan Mahaffey, and Jack Barugian. The Farcast comes to you weekly and is produced by Michael Farr and Harry Jennings and is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and all major podcast platforms. Please subscribe and don't miss a minute. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at hjennings@farmiller.com. Let us know any questions you have and topics you'd like to hear us cover. We would like to remind you that the Farcast podcast is for informational purposes only and it should not be considered legal or financial advice. Any mention of a specific security should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell, and please be aware that past performance is not a guide to the future performance of any index, fund, manager, or strategy. The information, statements, comments, views, and opinions provided in this podcast are general in nature, not intended to be, and should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by Farr, Miller & Washington or any firm any of our guests may represent. And before you make any investment decision, we strongly recommend you consult with a financial professional to determine what may be best for your individual needs and your goals. And if we can be of assistance at Farr, Miller & Washington, please reach out to me at hjennings@farmiller.com. We are here to help, and I'll be happy to put any of our listeners in touch with one of our investment professionals for a complimentary review of your portfolio and your investment goals. We hope you listen in again next week. Go beyond the headlines every week with the Farcast, Wall Street, Washington, and the world.